What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me for this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99, but make sure, more importantly, that you are looking at our draft guide. We have been updating it pretty much every single day over the last couple of weeks. We got more than 25 articles in there. My rankings got an update yesterday. And our draft tracker, which has been live over the last week, powered by the ATC projections, is also going to get a little bit of an update overnight to reflect some of the changes in ATC. So make sure you guys are checking all that out. It is at the link in the description of the episode. We are continuing on with our position previews this week. When I had a couple of days in a row, I was listening back while I was editing, and I was calling them team previews still. No, we're into category previews at this point, and we're talking about relievers, and who better to bring on to talk about relievers than Greg Jewett, our old friend. He's got a couple of exciting things to talk about here, a new endeavor over the last few weeks. But make sure first that you're following Greg on Twitter at GJewett with two T's and the number 9. You'll also find that in the link of the episode. Greg, really appreciate you coming on today. How you been?
I'm all right, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I mentioned I want to give you a chance to just kind of talk about everything that is going on with you. Your work is at a few different places, but a notable new one recently, and I want you to just kind of tell everybody about that in case they might have missed it.
Yeah, as if writing for The Athletic and running Reliever Recon and doing a once a week. That's my break from pitchers, the once a week column at Baseball HQ in season on hitting streamers. I got to know a couple of the founding fathers from Closer Monkey, and life is transitioning for those guys, and their kids are older, and they want to go be dads and do those fun things. And my son's 22, so I've done all those fun things. So I was able to work out a deal, and myself and a couple of the guys from Recon, Nate and Aaron, and we're talking to a couple other people to make sure I got the West Coast and late nights covered in season. Being a teacher, it gets hard. So we're excited about this this new endeavor too, and we've been seeing a lot more traffic the last week or so, which is cool. And so just taking everything we do at Recon and kind of Close Monkey, I think, is a little more geared towards the CBS/Yahoo/ESPN player, which is okay, and it's cool. Recon, I kind of get a little too deep at times. That's a little more NFBC centric. We have something for everybody, and it's just a matter of doing all those things. So yeah, today was a frenetic/anxiety-driven day, but we, you got to be the duck on the pond. You look calm on the surface with the feet churning underneath, and we plowed through it. So we're recovered. Milwaukee's going to run a committee apparently until somebody separates himself from the crowd. And as if we didn't have enough questions about the White Sox bullpen, now they're putting Kopech into the mix too. So it'll be there's going to be a lot of ADP variance in the next few days.
Yeah, already I sent over the sheet last night with these tiers kind of built out that we're going to talk about. And there was already some movement just overnight because that's just the time of year that it is. I did my shortstop preview yesterday, and we were talking about Jackson Holliday and talking about his minimum pick was 135. And then I looked again last night, and his minimum pick was 99. Mm-hmm. So that was just a few hours, and he's already jumping up. That's just the time of year it is. But truly, everybody, Greg is the foremost authority on closers and bullpens, relievers in general. In the fantasy world, you need to be checking out all of his work because he stays right up to date on everything. He's already got work up talking about the situations that he alluded to in Milwaukee and in Chicago. Let's talk about these a little bit first. Devin Williams, I have a couple of shares, not overly invested, but there were a couple drafts where I thought, yeah, sure, I'll lock down closer early. And, one of the risks of drafting early, of course. Is there, in any format, maybe draft and holds, where you still want to take a chance on Devin Williams, or is he just completely off the board at this point? Because there's a chance that maybe he's back in June, and you could argue maybe he's worth stashing, but I'm interested what you think there.
All right, so, it's nice. It's nice that our community is so cool that we can reach out to people. So I was texting with Ariel Cohen this morning just to kind of get a feel for what he's going to change the projection on innings to. He estimated about 30 innings for Williams. He was being a little more cautious than June 1st, which I was thinking June 1st too, but we're talking 6 weeks, no throwing, 6 weeks rehab, and then a ramp up period. So we don't really know if there's no setbacks. I met him halfway. So I kind of went with June 15th as a return date, like an ideal with no setbacks. And I came up with I'm more aggressive than Ariel is with the projections. So I came up with like roughly between 15 and 19, depends on which way you want to do it. So, you know, that kind of lands him into when I'm using my SGPs, that kind of lands him in the same bucket as Estevez, Stevenson, that kind of like fringy tier. So I think it's easier in leagues where you can put him on an IL. And I think it might even be easier in a draft and hold. It's going to be tough because if you're doing like an NFBC where you only get 7 bench spots and you're tying up a spot with a guy that's out for probably 2 months, then that spot's kind of like a drain. You can't use that to burn and churn. So unless you're super patient, it all depends. It's all build dependent as any of these things are going to be. I just think that's how you have to approach it. So, I mean, I don't think it's a death knell for people who already have William shares. It's just going to require patience now.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky in those NFBC leagues. If you're going to want to hold them, I'm probably going to hold them because, I mean, I have third round shares invested. So
it's going right. to be that tough. Makes it harder. Yeah,
it makes it a lot harder. And that sunk cost thing that we have in our heads, it's tricky. Like, I don't know what his back is going to look like in a couple months. Backs are very tricky, mm-hmm. and spines are even trickier. So maybe he does come back. Maybe, like, who knows? Like, that initial timeline could be moved around a little bit. That's just what they're saying as of today. But it's definitely very worrisome. Now, there's a few names floating around the Milwaukee pen that could get saves. And this is just kind of, I think personally, most people should just avoid this altogether. Your 12 team Yahoo players, this is one where if you're taking these guys, it's out of desperation. But you do have a name that you think will kind of emerge from the bunch here as the guy a little bit, right?
Who I want to emerge doesn't matter, but you know, I know the beat writer mentioned Kurt Hogg mentioned that Piamps and Uribe may get the lion's shares of save chances at the beginning of the season. He didn't initially mention Trevor McGill, but he came around today. I really think performance over the last week and a half here in spring training, and I'm not worried about are they, you know, having great outings. I'm looking more at K-BB velocity, things of that nature. That's all I'm really looking at in spring. I just want to know who they're facing and how well they're throwing, and are they getting strikeouts and not walking people. And the other day I was excited to watch Uribe, and then he hit 2 batters, had that, there was a couple of bad plays on defense, but it wasn't a pretty inning. And I think there's still some growing pains. He's the closer of the future. And even the column even acknowledged that, you know, their plan is to have him take over in 2 years, which goes right along with Williams being an unrestricted free agent after next season. The thing about McGill is he's a big dude, kind of like Felix Bautista. He's like 6'8", throws 99, a lot of downhill playing. Eno Saris agrees that he's got pretty good stuff. So we just have to see. He had a really strong finish to the year last year, but it's also a small sample. So it's like, you know, you take that with a grain of salt, and it's cool. Can he repeat that? I think it was 29-5 K-BB over his last 18 innings last year. So that's cool. But he still had a 1.16 whip with that. So he can be hittable at times. He throws hard, but it's kind of straight. So with that fastball, but he does have a knuckle curve. So he kind of has the same arsenal as Kimbrel, but with better velocity. So if he can locate better, then he might be able to separate himself. And the only thing to me that works against Piamps is he's kind of like a ground ball specialist. And I think he'd be best suited like to come in dirty innings, get a double play ground out, you know, what I call the highest leverage reliever. So if that happens and he kind of becomes the fireman by default, that kind of will let save chances gravitate towards Uribe or McGill, who haven't pitched yet in that contest. So that's the only reason I think that he may be able to emerge with the most saves. Right now, I still projected Piamps to get the most just at the get-go based on what happened last year, and Murphy will probably lean on him early. But if he realizes I need him in those biggest moments, then that's when you're going to see the other guys maybe surpass him as far as save opportunities go.
So we play a lot of NFBC and talk a lot of NFBC players, and they are understandably going to be kind of interested in these guys. I saw some screenshots of slow drafts that are going on overnight, and then those three go right in a row. for your average player, 10-teamer, 12-teamer, are these guys worth taking shots on, do you think? You're playing in Yahoo, 12-team league, whatever, head-to-head roto. Would you end of your draft last kind of pick, or would you just stay away altogether, you think?
I would probably avoid it. I would rather know where those saves are coming from at that. In a smaller league, I'm less apt to do that. I had the chance to take one of them at the end of the TGFBI, but I had already had enough relievers on my roster. And I'm like, I'm not just going to take a spot and then end up churning it the first, the first time you can add people. So I'll let somebody else take the headache right now. Like I said, in the first week or two of the season, if somebody's struggling and somebody kind of takes over and Murphy's going to go with a hot hand, then you can recognize it and take it and run as a waiver claim. I think that's an easier way to do it. Let the players decide for you rather than you trying to pick one out of a hat.
I think that's a really good call. The other thing that you mentioned today that's kind of thrown a wrench into the plans is Michael Kopech getting moved into the bullpen. If you just look at Roster Resource, they have four people currently projected to close. This is another kind of a mess of a situation. Steven Wilson, John Brebbia, Michael Kopech, and Jordan Leisure, who's been kind of the talk of the town the last few days as well on Twitter. I've always thought Kopech was better suited as a bullpen arm. I think that he might be a half-decent closer if they were going to give him the chance. What's your lean here? Is he going to be given a shot? I honestly have no idea what they're going to be doing at this point.
I agree. And we have to give a hat tip to Mike Carter, because I think months ago he was saying, well, Kopech can be in the closer, you know, and you're like, well, they need him to start. And then all of a sudden, here we are. He's just done so bad as a starter that I think they're trying to find a way to rebuild his confidence. I mean, we forget a long time ago that Gausman was like hitting the skids and then worked it as a reliever for the Reds and resurrected his career. So I don't know that Kopech can follow that same path because they have different arsenals. However, he maybe just turning it loose for an inning will help him get better. And maybe he'll take that role and run with it. We don't know. I'm not a huge Brebbia person. You know, he's a nice reliever. I was intrigued by Jordan Leisure. He was out at the AFL when we were out there. And he's had a really, really strong spring. But I would think they would want to ease him into safe situations. So if Brebbia is not ready for opening day, it might push Kopech to the top of that list. Steven Wilson's a solid reliever, but I see him more as a multi-inning or setup guy. I just don't think he has the arsenal. He's way too hittable. His contact rates are too high in my estimations. I think Kopech could boost his swing and miss stuff enough as a reliever to at least be a usable closer. I won't say he'll be dominant by any means, but he worked as a reliever in 2021, so he has experience with it. It's not like he has to learn how to get ready and get hot to enter a game as a reliever. He might transition well. Him or Leisure, I think, could wrestle that job away. It'll just really depend on the early season performances.
Yeah. Similar kind of thing with Milwaukee, except there's probably even fewer saves there's going to be to divvy up in Chicago than there are in Milwaukee. Sure. You're going to split it three or four ways. And then again, if you're in a deeper league, I understand kind of taking some shots here and there. But for most of you guys listening, it's not a situation that you should be getting yourself into unless you're incredibly desperate. But let's start breaking down these tiers a little bit. The top group of guys that are always kind of the first few names off the board, Diaz, Hader, Duran, Clase, Doval, and Iglesias. Formerly, we had Williams in that group, but no more. Do you find yourself in the drafts you've done this year locking down one of these quote-unquote safe, early 30-save guys? Has that been part of what you've been doing, Greg?
I'm more of the Scott Genstad weight pool as far as drafts. The only draft I've done is the TGFBI. I don't really dip my toe in the water probably for another week. I'm really going to spend next week focusing on the pockets and tiers and where I might want to go and really how to construct the builds that I want to. I'm playing two main events this year, which will be fun, but it's daunting. I was fortunate enough to win my first dalliance in the main. I joke, more people know that Curlin came in second than I actually won that league. But, you know, it is what it is. And Curlin does a great job at getting people involved. And, you know, he had a hell of a team. He just had a couple of bad breaks down the stretch. And I was lucky enough to hang on. I only won by half point. It's not like I beat him down or anything. It was like I was in fifth place at one point. And I just kept tracking down and battling until we got up there. But I'm a late drafter. I usually don't fish in that tier. In TGFBI, even my first closer, I took Andres Munoz. I just think he's somebody that's not going in that tier you mentioned that at the end of the season could finish there. I would like Santos and Brash to come back. So, and then he has better setup relievers because the rest of that bullpen right now is kind of a mess, even though they added Stanek. But a healthy Munoz, I think, can pitch closer to 2022 than what we saw last year. Last year, he never really got at full health. When I saw he was hitting 102 early in camp, I was like, oh, wait a minute. So, yeah, I've kind of, and even in my re-rankings that are going to be put up after the Williams news at the Athletic, I think Munoz bubbled up to 5 for me. So based on the SGPs and the projections that I build, it's, there's always somebody like last year, I had a couple of shares of Bautista. There's always somebody in that second grouping that pops into that front group. And I like to try and find that sweet spot and thread that needle.
I completely agree with Munoz. In terms of those guys that are being drafted in the top tier, you focus on relievers, so you're going to be more likely to find these later targets, these later gems than the average person. But for those who are going to take the plunge on the Diaz, the Haters, the Rans, the Clauses, any massive targets or fades in that grouping for you?
I don't think massive. I'm kind of a little bit wary of Hader just because of his fly ball tendencies in that ballpark now. I mean, he is left-handed, and all you've got to do to get a ball out of Minute Maid is as a right-handed batter, yank it down the line. So, you know, balls that were dying on the warning track in San Diego might be skidding over the wall in Houston. So, and again, I don't think Josh Hader is going to collapse as a closer by any means. I just think his whip and ERA is probably not going to be nearly as shiny as it was last season. I just see some regression in his arsenal as far as going there. He is using more sliders, which could help his strikeout percentage. Houston's pretty stubborn, so they're as stubborn as he is because he threw 70% sinkers last year, and I think you need to diversify a little bit, and I think Houston's getting him to buy into that, so that could help. And plus, first year on a new team justifying a contract, sometimes those guys try a little too hard to justify it, so I'll wait and see. So I might be back in on Hader next year. This year, he'd be one of the people up there. I'll probably just avoid. I'll let somebody else do it. And he's going, his price has really gone up. I was kind of surprised, to be quite frank. So he'll definitely be jumping up where Devin was going, in my estimation.
Yeah, people will look to fill that void that's been created now. Edwin Diaz is somebody that I haven't drafted this year. Does the year off give you any concern? I know it wasn't an arm injury, but just the fact that he hasn't pitched in major league games in a year, is there anything to be concerned about there with him, or is he, you know, I've heard a lot of people say he's clear cut SPR closer one.
No, I you know, he's one of the people you can count on your hands that can give you triple digits as a reliever and strikeouts. So I think that's what really separates him in that grouping, just because of the strikeout upside that he provides. And you know, you don't want to say any, you can't base everything off his first outing, but he looked pretty crisp. He had guys wave. I mean, he had 6 whiffs just off his slider. So it looks like that pitch is still dominant for him. So I think he can carry things over, you know. Again, the team concept hurts him a little bit, so he might not get as many saves as some of those other guys. But the strikeouts help keep him right near the top. I mean, that's what really separated Bautista last year. He still finished in my SGPs. In our points league, he still finished as the highest scoring points reliever, even though he didn't pitch the last 2 weeks of the season because of that strikeout cushion he had compared to everybody else. It was just so far away and ahead of them. It just separated them from the pack.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. You're not so worried about Diaz. I think maybe it's been misplaced worries on my behalf just because, I don't know. It's just because he's missed a year, but the fact that it wasn't his arm that was injured is definitely the thing there that I think a lot of people – I don't know if everybody looks at it as closely as we do. They might just see he missed the year and they'll avoid him because of that. Not the sharps, but in your average in your average home league, that might be the case. Moving on to this kind of next group, you mentioned Munoz is somebody that you really like there. There's also Jordan Romano, Alexis Diaz, Evan Phillips, Paul Sewald. David Bednar is also being drafted in this group. He'll probably continue to fall a little bit. And then also Pete Fairbanks. This is kind of where I like to shop for my first closer. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other guys, one other guy specifically in the next group that I also like, but Munoz, Phillips, Fairbanks. I have a couple of Diaz shares that I don't feel as great about as I did earlier in the offseason. But do you agree this is kind of the sweet spot to be getting your first closer in drafts?
Yeah, I don't mind shopping here at all. And I get the stuff with Alexis Diaz. But, you know, if he didn't have those implosions down the stretch, I wonder how we would be treating him, because his first 66 outings were incredible. He just wore out. You know, the Reds really overused him early in the season, and it showed down the stretch in September. But, yeah, I like this group here. Speaking of Bednar, that's another person I just kind of dialed back the saves and innings a little bit. Nothing crazy, but because he hasn't even thrown a live BP, I have a hard time. I again, reached out with Ariel, and I agreed. I put about middle of April for his possible return. But anytime that keeps getting pushed back, then we're going to have to start looking at that a little more closely. So he dropped, I think, to 14th. In my rankings, but that's pending review on when he actually does appear in a spring training game, because we need it soon. I mean, throwing at 120 feet is nice, but we got to get some action off the mound.
It's kind of just crept up on us, but 2 weeks from when we're recording, there will be Major League Baseball games going on opening day. And technically speaking, a week from now, there are going to be games that are going to be counting towards the standings in Korea. So it's the offseason's gone. It's already completely behind us, which is kind of crazy to think about. Jordan Romano is somebody that I've heard a lot of people say that they're very worried about as a Blue Jay fan. I watched him a lot down the stretch. He was concerning. Always the back injuries are going to be a little bit concerning. Is he kind of a fade for you in this group, or what's your interest level in Romano?
He's not a fade, but that back, the back thing sits in the back of my mind, no pun intended. So, you know, he was a different pitcher after that. Just like, you know, Alvarado was a different pitcher after his elbow injury. So these things do affect these guys, and the pitch clock and all the other stuff that we bake into this. I'm not going to say Romano's a fade, but he's also not somebody I push to the top of my queue. I just kind of see what happens. Like when I took Munoz, I could have taken Romano, but I preferred at that point. I was just going, I mean, with the TGFBI and being an overall thing, I went for the upside rather than the safe play. You know, but you know, I could be taking on too much risk on, because I also have Glasnow. So I'm just like, so not my normal strategy, but you can have a little more fun with that sort of a league.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of get your guys type of league. You don't have to pay a massive entry fee or anything like that. There is a side pot. I'm not sure if you join in at the side pot, but it's kind of, for me, just a chance to draft the guys that I've been wanting to take all off season. Munoz, I think talent wise is a better pitcher than Romano, but there has been some questions about how they've used him the last couple of years, kind of similarly to Jhoan Duran. Jhoan Duran, kind of jumping around here, but talent wise, you could argue he's maybe the best reliever in baseball. Is that something that is crazy to say? Like, I think he's
no, not at all. When I did the preseason piece for Vlad Sadler over at FTN, I did a little chart showing Felix Bautista's underlying data from 2022 versus Duran's underlying data from last year, and they're very, very similar. And Duran was almost like a different pitcher in the playoffs. He was really just electric. His stuff was just moving everywhere, and he was mowing down people, good lineups. So I'm curious to see if that approach and arsenal will carry over. And I was also encouraged in the second half, he only recorded more than three outs once. So I think he's really kind of transforming into that one inning dominant closer thing that the Twins usually don't do, but I think they understand what they have in them. And it's also been cool because Griffin Jacks has been lights out this spring. So with Jacks and Brock Stewart healthy, that's a very good leverage ladder. If you're in a holds or solds league, I mean, the Twins, I think, could provide you a bounty of those statistics in that sort of a format.
Yeah, my only save plus hold league is Tout Wars, and I took Duran. And part of my reasoning behind it was, even if they do mess around and give Jax a couple of saves here and there, that would hurt you in the standard 5x5 where you have save plus hold. Duran is pretty unimpeachable there, you know.
Even if it is,
yeah. Would he be the number one save in save plus holds, you think, the number one reliever?
The hardest thing about saves and holds is it's an accumulator. Just because the Guardians play so many games like that, I still had Clase first, but it was because of the saves and holds, not because of his ratios and strikeout upside. Or, you know, easily you could say Duran could surpass him on all those things, especially if the save total goes up. You know, on a talent wise, yes, I think Duran is probably one of the best people you can have in that general format. But when you marry to, you know, I try and rely on a number. So when I put those things down, you know, Clase still has more than 40 saves in back-to-back seasons. He's the only one.
Yeah. It's been fun, though, looking at the StatCast game feeds every day here and just seeing the top five fastest pitches of the day. Every other day, it's Joan Duran, 101, 101, 101.
Don't forget Mason Miller.
Mason Miller. We're going to get to him for sure. I love Mason Miller, and I almost wish we didn't have to talk about him because I wish he was still a starting pitcher, but we'll get to that. Let's move on to the next tier, though. The third tier is we're starting to see the talent level deteriorate a little bit here. In terms of ADP, we're doing this, but it's Clay Holmes, Ryan Helsley, Craig Kimbrell, Tanner Scott, Albert Alzolay. I think Helsley should be in the second tier, but he's being drafted in the third tier. Is that just me?
Well, here's the thing. From doing what I do, I subscribe to, like, it's at least 15 papers now. And in an article in the St. Louis Dispatch, they mention that Helsley understands that there's going to be times he's needed in the eighth inning. And this is from Marmol saying, you know, so again, he's a better pitcher for solds, as you were the same thing you were kind of intimating with Duran. The fact that there'll be games where if it's the 3, 4, 5 hitters, he's going to come in the eighth and get them. And then whoever didn't pitch, like Gallegos or whatever, is going to scoop up and get the save in the ninth, which will frustrate people. But it is, I don't think it's going to like depress him. I think I still projected him for 26 saves, which is a good number. I just don't think the way the Cardinals use him, I don't think he can get to 30. So I think that's what kind of keeps him just a little bit below those other guys. And I think fantasy people are starting to kind of acknowledge and accept that.
It's unfortunate. I think the talent
plus the injury last year. So
yeah, he did come back and look very good after the injury, which is why I'm just really hoping. And I have a couple of shares usually as my second closer, once or twice as my first closer, but kind of just crossing my fingers. Even if it's 26, though, honestly, 26 versus 30, like it's a, I would prefer 30, but 26, I think I would still kind of take. Let's talk about Tanner Scott, though. Tanner Scott has looked less than ideal in spring.
Atrocious?
Awful, terrible. is it fair to lower him down a couple notches in rankings because of this, or is this all just kind of spring training noise still to you?
Well, first, I don't understand, because after the first couple of rough outings, you would think they would just put him on the backfields and let him work on mechanics. I don't know why they keep putting him out on a mound, and it looks like he's searching for it. You know what I mean? So, am I concerned? A little. Carlos Estevez last year went through a similar thing. Remember in spring, he was throwing the ball all over the place. Everyone was like, oh my God, I can't take him as my closer. And then all of a sudden, you know, he wasn't great, but in the first half, he made a lot of fantasy players happy. You know, Scott's tough because, you know, Ryan Helsley didn't really have command till he did in 2022. So we don't know if it's going to be sticky with Tanner Scott or not. And I think that's the biggest thing. So if I'm worried about command and then the guy's got 7 walks already in the spring training games, now it makes my worry meter go a little higher. And I did take him as my second closer in TGFBI. So now I'm like kind of hanging on here. So we'll see what happens. But I would prefer him as my second, not my first, just because of the concerns that you're touching upon.
Yeah, I just look at the whole track record, and last year was fantastic, but that was kind of the first amazing season he's had. A lot of the track record has been okay, not bad, and I think he's kind of gotten unlucky a little bit. 4 ERA for his career, he has a 3.38 xFIP, but I feel like everybody just kind of fully bought in, especially in early drafts. We saw Tanner Scott being drafted like in the top 60, 70 picks a few times.
Well, it was the strikeouts.
Yeah.
Triple digit strikeouts gets people's attention.
Absolutely. Maybe it was just me, but how repeatable is that though?
And he can be a whip wrist. So, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's always risk tolerance is always a part of this wonderful game we play. So, yeah. If you don't like risk, then you definitely don't want Scott on your roster.
Yeah, that's totally fair. In this group, generally speaking, Holmes, Kimbrell, Alzolay, those guys we haven't mentioned yet. What's your general interest level there? I know there's been some talk with Alzolay. I saw in the Mining the News article a few weeks back that he wasn't just going to be given the role, that it was going to be something he had to earn. Mm-hmm. And now they have Norris. So is there any kind of concern about Alzolay having that role?
I don't think so. I think the bigger concern is the forearm issue that shut him down for a while in September. He's had a long track record of not being healthy. So we just don't know if there's going to be a carryover effect or anything that affects him this season with that issue. We don't like things in the forearms. We know that's near the elbow. So we just got to watch that closely. He's had a very good spring. You know, Holmes is solid. The only thing that worries me about Holmes is the Yankees bullpen is not very good. And with Conley not being ready for opening day, it makes it even worse. Loaisiga's had a lot of lingering health issues. Caleb Ferguson was a different pitcher in the second half than the first last year. You look at his numbers, like, oh, he's not bad. But when you parcel out and look at the thing, you're like, So we don't know if hitters adjusted or if they got the book on them. I know Victor Gonzalez has never been reliable. It's Ian Hamilton and Holmes. I mean, when those two pitch, it's okay. When it's not those two, like if Hamilton pitches 1.2 innings and then he's not available for 2 days, it's going to make things a little shakier in that leverage ladder. So that's, again, that to me, that's the only thing that really affects Holmes is the people getting the ball to him. But that also affects Munoz. So I can't say one without the other, but that's just it. But those three are very steady producers. They're just not flashy. So that's why people don't like scream off the mountaintops for them, but they're very solid relievers.
Any chance that Cano is going to usurp Kimbrell in your mind?
I don't think so. I think they just want to keep him in that HLR. And I think Baltimore understands that Kimbrell wore down the stretch last year. And they have Cano that they can use in safe situations. A big key to that is Dylan Tate is healthy and been very productive this spring. So he can do some of the things that Cano did, another sinker ground ball guy that can help mitigate those big innings. And Keegan Aiken's actually been very good this spring. So, I mean, between Aiken and Tate, you know, on days Kimbrell needs a day off, those guys can do the seventh and the eighth, and then Cano can take over the ninth. So you're not going to see, like, Kimbrell go three times in 4 days. I think they'll be very smart about how they manage to keep him. They'll manage his workload well. I think that's the case.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's kind of shift on to this last group. I've labeled it the last acceptable group, but I think some of them are kind of less than acceptable for sure.
Yeah, we're getting near the cliff.
Yeah. Kenley Jansen, Jose Alvarado, Alex Lang, Jose Leclerc, Carlos Estevez, Mason Miller, Robert Suarez. What's your interest level in general? I think these are second, third closers at best, but is there anybody you think could kind of make a leap from this group? I've been a big Alvarado fan, but I've been talked down by a lot of Phillies people this whole offseason about him. But what are your thoughts on this group as a whole?
All right, well, I'm not going to pile on, but Alvarado, like I said, was a different reliever after that injury, and anybody is. I mean, you know, it was like his season was like an act in three plays. He had that dominant start with the 21 strikeouts and no walks. And then he came back too soon and was awful. And then the last part of the season, that last third, he was good, but he had like a 1.16 whip, which I think is a more reasonable number. I don't think he's a 1.03 whip guy for a full season. If he can make a full season, you know, two times on the IL, we can't ignore that. So people like when Steamer and the other things were handing out 20 saves to him, I was a little skeptical. I think I put him at 16, but that's baking in a full season. I don't love the floating closer concept, but it is what it is. So you just have to understand that's a part of if you take him. Jansen's Jansen, you know, he still had, everyone poo-poos on him, but he had 29 saves last year.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't great and his whip's going in the wrong direction, but he still got 29 saves. So, I mean, if he's your third reliever, you can do a lot worse things in the world than have Kenley Jansen gut out some games for you. But You know, I'm curious what happens with Suarez. Will he had a rough start to spring, but his last four outings, he was a lot more dialed in, scoreless, reduced his walks. You know, if he's comfortable, I mean, they paid him to be the closer of the future. I don't know how durable, just like Alvarado, I don't know how durable Yuki Matsui is going to be. I mean, I've said this on other podcasts, Joe, but you've met me in person. I'm not a big guy. Yuki Matsui is an inch taller than me. So, you know, I know shorter relievers have handled this before, but coming from the MPB, it's a different animal. They play a different schedule. It's not as not as condensed, as intense as the majors are. So I don't know if he can handle back-to-back outings. I don't know if he can handle 3 and 4 days. That's something we're going to have to see as time goes by. So I don't mind getting Suarez where he is, especially if it gets me 20 saves at his price point. I think that's a pretty good bargain. I worry about Estevez. His velocity's down, but a lot of people are, but it's down like 4 ticks. So I don't know if that's, he's just saving himself, or if there's a little, you know, if he's just fatigued from last year. I don't know. It's a tough one there. But in this little bucket here, there keeps, you know, there was the mining the news about Miller, maybe not, you know, getting multiple innings. He's only thrown one inning outings this spring. They have not stretched him out at all. Jordan Leisure has more multiple inning outings than Mason Miller. And that happened yesterday. So he's lighting up the radar gun. He looks pretty dominant, and Danny Jimenez is Danny Jimenez. So I'm not too worried about him usurping somebody with the talent level of Miller's. If Kotze was saying yesterday in a San Francisco Chronicle article that he thinks they can go 500. I think that's a reach. However, if winning means that much to him, then he might want Miller in those save situations if that's going to be his thing. So there's been two different posts in the last week, one on MLB.com and that Chronicle article I'm referencing, that kind of hinted that they see Miller as the closer. And that was from Martin Gallegos, who I referenced that first pitch way back in Arizona when people were kind of chuckling when I had Mason Miller listed as a reliever on the closer charts I put up on the screen. But lo and behold, he's a reliever. And Gallegos was the first one to write about it. So we'll see what happens. I'm not saying Miller's going to be the closer from day one and dominate, but I am saying he could get you, if he gets 20 saves with the strikeout upside, if he can stay healthy, I think that's a very sneaky season at his price point.
I love Mason Miller. That talent is just so immense. When he did his first career start last year, I had Nick Pollock on the show going and reacting live while Miller was pitching, and Nick was just going insane. And that was kind of what I was basing my initial hit on, because I didn't know a lot about him. He had only thrown 22 innings or something in the minor leagues at that point. Didn't throw a lot last year. The talent is so sky high, and it does make sense, I think, just to kind of preserve him, to put him in the pen. Do you think it's a permanent move to the pen, or is this something that you think will eventually lead back to him being a starting pitcher?
That's the $64,000 question. You know, it was supposed to be temporary for Duran, and look where we are. So I don't know if this might be up to Mason Miller. He might be like, hey, I'm comfortable here and this kept me healthy. I just want to keep doing it. We don't know. If he truly wants to be a starter, he'll probably push him like Crochet did with the White Sox to get back into the rotation. But let's get through a full season healthy. That's goal number one with Mason. If we can get him 60 innings this year, I would be ecstatic.
Yeah, you and me both.
We'll cross that bridge after.
There's a couple of other kind of, maybe not necessarily committees, but situations where it's not fully clear what we're looking at. Washington with Finnegan and Harvey. We have Texas with Leclerc and Robertson. We have Detroit with Alex Lang, who I think is kind of secure. Any massive interest in these guys, or maybe not even massive interest, but any interest at all in taking these guys, or are these situations that you're kind of avoiding if you can?
If I'm taking an RP3, I don't mind Hunter Harvey. But again, the team's already said Finnegan's going to start the year as the closer. So that would be something where Finnegan would have to lose it, or they trade him. You know, Finnegan could be somebody that gets dealt if a team loses their ninth inning option, or something goes sideways with Devin Williams and Milwaukee fancies itself as a contender still. They might trade for somebody like Finnegan. You know, he could be very popular at the trade deadline. We'll have to see how that goes. But he did lose the job last year. I mean, Harvey took it in late June and had it till the All-Star break. Then he went back on the IL, and that opened the door again for Finnegan. And then he had that hot streak, and then he stayed there when Harvey came back. Texas, I'm not touching. I just feel like that's going to be something that changes hands more than once, and I don't want to be a part of it. LeClerc did finish the year well. I do like Sabores. I'm curious about him in a DC in the later rounds, or I wouldn't mind grabbing Sabores and just, you know, seeing if it happens somewhere down the road. Or Texas, if they're getting those pitchers back and they're contending, they'll go out and trade for somebody, whether it's a Jansen or what other, you know, Tanner Scott, if he's throwing well again. You know, there's a lot of guys, Seawall, there's a lot of guys that are free agents at the end of the season that, depending on what their team does, will depend on how they get handled at the trade deadline. So, but yeah, I'm mostly avoiding these things. And Lang, again, he's talking about first pitch strikes and this, that, and yeah, cool. We have to see it. You know, they really strengthen that bullpen, I think, as just to ensure themselves in case it happened. But Eno's on Foley, and I prefer Miller, but we'll see what happens if Lang does lose his grip on that role.
This is something that I've kind of seen over the last 24 hours or so in reference to Milwaukee, but I'm kind of curious, and this would just be like speculation. Is there any chance maybe that Ryan Pressly ends up getting traded to one of these teams that is kind of in need of a more solid guy, you think, and ends up as a full-time closer this year? Is that something that maybe you keep in the back of your head if you're drafting or picking up Pressly, that he could end up being traded and getting a job?
I doubt it, just because the Astros bullpen outside of Pressly, Hader, and Abreu is not very good. So I don't think they can afford that luxury right now, the way that they're constructed. I understand what you're thinking. I just don't. He's not necessarily a free agent. He has to make, I think, 55 appearances, and then that triggers a opt-out clause he gets at the end of the season. So I think Houston will just get what they can get out of him. And if he exercises the walkout, the opt-out, then you know, they got everything they could out of him at that point. Yeah, it's, unless Houston, for some reason, the rotation crumbles and they're not doing well, if Texas and Seattle can jump them, then you could see it, I think. But that would be, we really wouldn't know till the trade deadline. That's going to be a slow evolving situation.
Okay, that's totally fair. Last thing I really wanted to ask you is, out of everybody we've talked about, maybe you guys we haven't talked about, well, and let's just kind of frame this for the listener who may just be playing in one league this year. Who is your absolute top must have targets and the guys that you're just not drafting whatsoever?
I mean, I've done a lot of that already, but you know, in that upper bucket, like I said, I like Durant. I just wish his price wouldn't keep climbing. It keeps kind of skidding up, and as it rises, I get a little more hesitant to pay that draft capital. I really like Munoz this year. You know, it's going to be, it seems like last year was too easy. So this year I feel like closing is going to be bananas, which I don't want to happen because that makes my life more difficult. But it was like, we really got rewarded last year with our targets, and it paid off. You know, we'll just have to see how all this goes, and people can try and stash different things and do different little theories. You know, but to me, Munoz and Miller are two guys, like I said, that can finish in the group ahead of them, not the place where they're presently being drafted based on their tiers. I do like Suarez late, a couple other things. So yeah, it'll be a fun year. I'm really, again, after next week, when I go through all of the whole Magilla of what I want to try and make happen in my main events, I'll really bring things into focus, and hopefully a few of these teams sort those things out for us. You know, it'd be nice if Texas and a couple others would say, okay, this is our guy, but I have a feeling Bochy's not going to say it till next week. So that's going to make it very difficult for the people that are drafting this weekend or even next weekend if he holds off on things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg, I really appreciate you coming on. It's always great getting to catch up. We've been able to meet and hang out a couple times in person, mm-hmm. and I'm sure we're going to be doing that again later on this year once the season wraps up. But just thank you again, man. It's always great to pick your brain on relievers. It is a treat.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. And yeah, I told Alec, I'm like, I got to stop being the old curmudgeon. Like I get out the first pitch and then I'm like in bed at 10. I gotta go to more of the podcast things and hang out and have a couple of beers. So that's my goal this year. I'm going to be, I do get a little bit of social anxiety, so I'm going to try and be a little more. I think him and I are planning out coming out a day earlier. We want to try and do the golf thing. Just be a little bit more present and not be, I feel like I'm so rushed. I get there, I do my presentation and I'm back on a plane and I'm back in Syracuse. I'm like, what just happened? So, but anyways, no, you're doing great work. We appreciate everything you do in the community. You're a positive influence. And, I appreciate you having me on and hopefully we helped a few people.
Hey, of course, whenever you're sharing some info on relievers, there are people who are getting helped out. Absolutely. Arizona, I kind of, echo what you're saying. This past season, I went the cheap route. I went with the red eye flights and the connectors, and I stayed the minimum amount of time. I'm a college student. Listeners know this. I'm not somebody who has a ton of expendable income, but I tried to just save every penny. And I told myself this next year, I'm coming in on the Tuesday or the Wednesday, and I'm staying till the Sunday. It's going to be more of a vacation, not something where I'm like home alone, rushing around, running to the airports at the last second. But it's always a great time. Of course, we talk about that on the show probably once a week. First Pitch Arizona, how you guys should be coming out and checking out everything that Baseball HQ puts on in the fall, usually the first week in November. So make sure you're checking everything out on their site. But of course, Greg is on Twitter at G Jewett. The G and the J always gets me. It's GJEWETT9. Make sure you're following him and keeping up with everything that he has going on. Before I do let you go, are there any upcoming pieces you want to remind people about that are going to be coming out over the next couple of days or podcast? Anything you want to plug before I get you going?
No, I do daily updates at Closer Monkey. We do a Spring Vibes thing every morning, kind of goes through what happened the day before, including some game recaps. Reliever Recon, that's $5 a month. We give you more information than you can consume. Especially if you play NFBC, we do the Sunday Fab Five and some other stuff too that really caters to that market. And we also have a person that does a daily streamer. So you're in a head-to-head league. He gives you relievers that could come in and get those vulture wins that when you're in a tough matchup on a Thursday or Friday, he gives you the guys that are lined up to come in and poach those W's or get you that save when a guy's tired and things of that nature. So we try and have something for everybody in that reliever realm. And then I'll be cranking out stuff soon at Baseball HQ with the hitting streamers. A lot of streamers in my life here, but it's okay. So lots of stuff coming. We got 2 weeks. This is the 2 week sprint to the end. We'll be rolling out divisional previews. I did the AL East the other day at the Closer Monkey. Aaron and A are going to jump in with a couple other ones, and then we'll have our cumulative reliever ranks. And then I'll also put out a solds list on Closer Monkey, but my Souls list on The Athletic was already updated today with the Devin Williams news, and the top 40 relievers will be updated shortly. I turned them into Nando. He's just got to get them in that big board and republish them again with the Bednar, taking Bednar's totals down a little bit. And obviously Williams is, will have a restructured top 40. So those two move down, Chapman moves up. The rest of it kind of stays where it was.
This is why you follow Greg. He keeps you up to date on every bit of closer / reliever information. And you're talking about streamers, focusing on streamers. That's how you get the edge, whether you're talking hitters, starting pitchers, relievers. Streaming is how you stay ahead of the curve. So obviously be checking out Greg's work all over the place. We're going to be putting that link for the Twitter in the description of the episode, so you guys can be checking out everything that he has going on. Also in the link is our draft guide. We are talking about 25 plus articles, rankings, projections. We have sleepers, bust, position profiles, draft reviews. I could go on all day, but I'm not going to keep Greg for that long. Just click on the link in the description and check out everything. The newest, coolest thing is the draft tracker, which does use ATC to compare your team in real time to the rest of your opponents. It's really cool. I've been using it in my drafts. So go ahead and check all that out. We'll be back again tomorrow, talking catchers with Casey Bubba. But until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.